It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
It is alive. I being it. And glad to be back. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower on the Horn. 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We are indeed live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way. Glad to be back with you. I'm not 100%, but I'm rounding the corner in the neighborhood of it. Thank you to the shot in the derriere and the resulting prescriptions to try to get me through the cold and allergy season there. So I'm glad to be back. Thanks to the guys for stepping in the last couple of days when I was out. Thanks to David Garrett, was able to step in and call the women's basketball broadcast. Huge win at Iowa State on Wednesday night. And coming up in a few minutes, we'll visit with Vic Schaefer, Texas women's head coach. He'll join us here in just a few minutes. So, as our good friend Dave Garrett did put, he said, back from the oil change, he said, Craig getting the oil change on the throat, which was kind of the case there. It was, by the way, the first time I've had to miss a game due to a throat issue since 1994. That's the last time. And even then, I started the game, my throat went out on me, and I couldn't finish then. But it's the first time I knew in advance I wasn't going to be able to, and that's why Dave was able to fly up and call the women's game, did a great job with that, and the women pulled off a great win, and we'll visit with Vic Schaefer coming up in a few moments. But feeling a heck of a lot better, made it to Pluckers to do Longhorn Weekly with Chris Beard last night. Got a story coming out of that here in a minute. However, happy to be joined by my co-host, the pride of Northwest Williamson County and a proud graduate of Florence High School, where they knew him.
Yes, sir.
As Highway 79, when he was an honorable mention all-district offensive lineman for the Florence Buffaloes. But you know him best for his outstanding work at Horns 24/7, where he's been grinding it away. That would be Jeff Howe.
Should have just nicknamed me the Grimace, because that's what it looked like. Greg, good to have you back.
Good to be back. Good to
all. Nice Sugar Bowl hoodie, by the way, came in with this morning.
Dude, I had to find something warm, and there it was, sitting there. Our producer, of course, who's been pretty busy, he actually thought he was going to have to do the sleep over here, because he thought we were going to get, here's those two words, wintry mix. He thought was going to get some wintry mix down here. Didn't happen. But Jonathan John Donaldson, J. Donaldson, we know him as Snoop Daniel, is alive and well this morning with your multicolored heavy-duty coat on.
Coat of many colors.
Yeah. Good.
We've been dropping biblical. We dropped Job yesterday and coat of many colors today.
Well, I'll give you another one. Jawbone of an ass that could go to the woman driver who yesterday, this was my story, and it wasn't just because it was a woman driver. She happened to be a female. It was a driver who was, and here are those big buzzwords, looking down at her phone. Many of you, if you've driven in Austin, I know you guys are familiar with this. When you go on 24th Street, Windsor to 24th, off of Mopac, and then, of course, they split, and then it's 24th going down the hill to Lamar and then on up, you know, toward West Campus. And that's the route I take coming in to get ready to do Longhorn Weekly. And you know how when you go down 24th, it kind of winds down as you go downhill, you're descending. Yeah. So I'm driving that, and I'm going down that hill, and I'm driving, looking, just eyes on the road. I'm not saying I never text and drive. I just try to severely limit that, only hopefully just to the occasional wide open space highway driving. But I tell people don't do it, especially in city traffic. And I'm driving my truck from Leif Johnson Ford, and a woman in an SUV just veers right over into my lane on one of those curvy sections. And I could see her looking at her phone. The only thing I could do to keep from hitting her was to veer right. Well, you know you don't have much space for the right. So at 30 miles an hour going downhill, I hit the curb and sustain a blowout on the right front tire. And so, fortunately, you're pretty close to Pluckers by the time you get to the stoplight. I was able to limp into Pluckers. But and got there, and I thought, well, now I've got to set up. I got to set up something. So I was texting Linda about it, and she said, well, I'll come down to be able to get you home. That was on her birthday yesterday, by the way. So she said, don't worry about it. I'll come down and get you. She goes, do you have a spare? And I said, I think I do. Let me go out and check. Well, Terry Kelly from our network had walked in. I was telling her about the story. She said, you know what? Because you pass right past the Longhorn Radio Network studios when you go up 24th.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I saw another vehicle go by that had two blowouts. And I said, really? She said, yeah. So count yourself lucky. I said, yeah, all right. So I go out to check to see if I had a spare. I went, wait a minute. Remember what she said? I walk around and look. Yeah, I'm the idiot with the two blowouts. Two! Because they hit the curb to keep from hitting the woman. And by the way, after I swerved in, we pull up to the stoplight, and she's still looking at her phone, and then just turned. And so I went on through. So somewhere there's a lady who never knows what she did and what it's going to cost me to have not one but two tires replaced, and hopefully there's no rim damage. However, my friends at Leif Johnson, they got it towed in, and they're on it right now. So thanks to them. But yeah, two blowouts. I think what a week this has been. So I'm glad to be here. Glad to be feeling good and glad to be here. So
it's good to have you back, Greg.
Good to be back here. So Vic Schaefer will be joining us here momentarily, and we'll talk about the Texas Women's Game. Other things we've got. Jeff will have a Longhorn notebook at the bottom of the hour.
Actually, it's our weekly visit with Mike Roach.
Oh, that's right. See, you get out a couple of days and you clock out. So good. So we got Mike Roach coming up.
Tis Friday.
We do have Inconceivable. There is one Florida man story, and it's a bad one, so I'm not going to – I heard you yesterday talk about how I try to lean toward the positive on some of the inconceivable, and that's true, yeah. And I've got a couple of those, but there's a Florida man story, and it's not good at all. So got that.
Like I said, I lean more towards naked man riding on a lawnmower, yeah, assaulting people with a pipe wrench.
Right, exactly. This is worse than that.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah, it's bad. This is boiled in oil and having your fat sulfur soaked stuff.
We've gone to the other side of the ledger on my hypothetical line for what stands as a bad inconceivable story.
Okay. This is bad. So I wouldn't even probably mention, except it's a Florida guy involved. So anyway, so we'll have that. We'll hear from Chris Beard in the 11 o'clock hour. This is from Longhorn Weekly from last night, talking about the rematch with Oklahoma State. So we'll do all that. But right now, joining us on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline for our weekly conversation is the head basketball coach for Texas women's basketball. That's Vic Schaefer. He joins us now fresh from a big win, a landmark win. Anytime you get a road top 10 victory, you have to be happy about that. And they did and dominated Iowa State in that one, and he joins us right now. Vic, I appreciate the time. How are you today?
Just blowing and going, trying to get ready for a quick turnaround, headed to TCU, got to play them at 1 tomorrow, and I hadn't seen the kids since we got home. We didn't get home till 2 in the morning yesterday morning, flying back from Ames, and they had the day off. We had to give them yesterday off, and so we'll have one day of prep and a real early shoot around Saturday morning and have to get ready to play a always tough team for us up in Fort Worth.
You bring up a couple of good points. I wanted to give you the opportunity to give a little illumination to the fans on some of the operative things that happen when you're coaching a basketball team. One is the mandatory day off. There is a mandatory day off for the NCAA. How challenging is it, especially in this day and age of trying to keep rosters full and healthy, how challenging is it to manage from advance how to which day to give the players off? I know there's some conventional wisdom that goes into it wrapped around the schedule, but has it become more challenging simply in this day and age that we're living in right now, when to give the players the mandated NCAA day off in between practices and games?
Yeah, it's it's really a challenge. We last week we had three games in 6 days, so we didn't take a day off. So that makes us take 2 days off either the week before or the week after. And so we took 2 days this week. We took Sunday, and then we took yesterday. So, and it becomes increasingly more difficult as you have games canceled, rescheduled, moved. It all becomes a challenge. And look, we play 18, in my mind, it's 18 rival games in a Big 12. I mean, and so there's really, it's pick your poison, which team you're going to spend 1 day less on prep time with your team, versus the other. So it is what it is. We got to get through it. And, this was a real challenging week for us. And again, we've got to go up there and play well. They're playing well now. They're coming off a big win, and they won two of their last three. So, we'll have to go up there and play well.
The other part of that question I was going to ask you, the challenge A of the of scheduling the off day. The other thing, Vic, is the philosophy, and I've seen it with a lot of coaches, both men's and women's, male and female head coaches, and men's and women's coaches, about how you manage, depending on when you get into town, the night before practice, whether that's enough to do the shoot around. If not, is there a demarcation line for you on how early that you will take a team in to shoot in the arena the morning of an afternoon game? Is that also a challenge for you, the way you look at how it sets up depending on the start time and when you get to town for a road game?
Yes, but my better teams understand that if we don't get them up, no matter what time the game is, my best teams have said, Coach, we're not any good if we sleep in, eat breakfast, and go to the arena. We need to have a shoot-around. And that's come from my leadership. And so we play at 1 o'clock on Saturday. We do have some 12 o'clock games every now and then. Well, it really becomes in. So then you're at the mercy of the visiting team. When you're at home, you can say, hey, I'm taking a 7 day. You can have 6 to 7 if you have a 12 o'clock game, and that's fine. But when you're on the road, they can stick you with that 6 a.m. shoot around for a 12 o'clock game. Like, we're stuck right now with a 7 a.m. shoot around for a 1 o'clock game. Well, that means you're getting kids up at 6 a.m. Now, for me and you, that ain't no big deal. For an 18 to 22 year old, that might be a little bit of an issue. So you got to make sure they're in bed the night before and not up all night. And of course, when we travel, we do things a little differently. We take up their phones the night before, so they're not up half the night on, doing whatever kids do on phones all night. But still, it can become a challenge. And so anyway, it's all part of it. That's life on the road, right? And so you just, that the only thing that you have going for you is that there is a rule that states they have to give you a shoot around within a 6 hour window. So.
Okay. All right. So even for a noon game, if they'll offer it to you at 6 a.m., depending on how far you travel or whatever, most times you're going to take that 6 a.m.er?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, my team usually wants it if for nothing else. They just realize that we lay around in the bed, they'll 7:45, get up and eat breakfast at 8, go back and sit in our room. Sometimes, man, that can be a really bad game at noon.
Yeah.
I can remember one game, maybe one, where we played at noon and didn't get up and have a shoot around. That was a long time ago when I was assistant.
Yeah. Visiting with Vic Schaefer, Texas women's basketball coach here on Light the Tower with Craig Way and Jeff Howe.
Vic, you talked to us coming off of the loss to Kansas that you were looking at, you know, maybe making some lineup changes, minute distribution, all that stuff. How have you and the staff approached that these last couple ball games, and how did Lauren not being available for that Iowa State game alter your plan for how you wanted to approach your rotation?
Well, the answer to the second question is I thought our post play was really good. I thought Latasha Lattimore was, like I've been saying all year, she's coming. You know, she just needs time to practice and get in games and develop. But she would play 20 minutes and was very effective. Amos coming back from injury, and she's getting sharper and sharper. Obviously, Gaston had a tremendous first half. We just stopped throwing the ball the second half. There's nobody to blame but our guards. We just wouldn't throw her the ball. I mean, she was dominant the first half. And so I was really pleased with our 4-5 production. And again, Audrey gets thrown in there at the foursome. And so we were really good there. We've altered our lineup a little bit. And we'll see what I think what you see is that we've got a lot of options, and it's based on practice and day-to-day work and all that. So, you know, we'll keep trying to get better every day. That's the challenge. That's the thought for the day. Just get better. I mean, just get better. Stop. You know, it's middle of January. Keep working. You know, we've still got a lot of season left, and our goal is to always keep getting better every day.
Is it, Vic, is it going to be day-to-day depending on protocol things or health things with regard to Lauren as you get ready to head up to Fort Worth?
You know, it is. She's could possibly be available. But, again, you're talking about somebody that's been inactive now for 5-6 days. And so, you know, obviously her conditioning level will be a little bit of a concern, and she'll have some rust. So, you know, all that aside, there's other kids been in practice now for a week, and they're getting better every day. So it'll be good to have another body available. We're still down one with Kobe, in her foot. But other than that, you know, it'll be nice to have her back for sure. And I know she's excited to get back, and we're excited to get her back.
Vic, we had a fan on the text line beat me to the punch. The next thing I was going to ask you was about Audrey, and I know we have regular questions on Audrey's health status, and I know it was a tough go. She was playing well and had a tough spill the other night in Ames. Any update on Audrey?
Yeah, I think she's fine. Yeah,
great.
What I've gotten yesterday from our medical folks, she's good to go.
That's great to hear. On a TCU, and but before we get to TCU, I'm going to be remiss if I don't ask you about Deanna Gaston's play, because we've had games where we've seen her dominate, and then we've had some games where she struggled with consistency or maybe got into foul difficulty or something like that, and she went at it. She gave you a gigantic first half on Wednesday night and worked hard in the second half as well. How about Deanna's presence, especially given she had the long sit-out before she could get back into action after sitting at the start of the year due to injury?
Well, and again, I mean, that's kind of been part of our issue coming back from Christmas. We had so many kids out, and they didn't practice, and then we had all the rust, and hard to knock rust off when you're going into a conference game. And so Dee was special the other night. Now, she was 5 out of 6 first half. She had 5 blocks in the game. I mean, I thought she was active, you know, really active, helping our guards defensively. I was a little disappointed in her individual post defense, but all of our post players were really need some, you know, we need work there, and that's part of our practice today. But I thought Dee was really good, especially in that first half. We were giving her the ball, and she finished everything around the cup, protected the rim like you want a big kid to do for you. And it's good to see that. Again, we need her to be great. We need her to be a difference player. She still battles a little bit with some shin discomfort, but we all feel like and know that, you know, she's fine there. It's just that it still bothers her at times. But, you know, she's got a rod in that in that leg behind that shin bone, so she should be pretty well good to go forever. But doesn't mean that she still doesn't have some discomfort every now and then. And you and I both know if you're running, you know, hard enough walking, if you're running, that's it's hard sometimes when you have some discomfort there. But you're right, she was special and really a difference player for us, I thought, the other night.
So it's TCU, it's your first look at the Horned Frogs this season, and I know we've been talking about post-play, but wouldn't you say it's fair to start, when you're talking about the Frogs, with as dynamic a guard as you'll find anywhere in this league and in a lot of the conferences in the country, and Lauren Hurd?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she's really, you know, obviously a great player and has been for a long time, and you know, she can be a senior one day. I keep thinking this is her senior year, and I think it is. But she's been around a long time and just a real, really good player, obviously. Real tough, aggressive kid. And they got another guard that's actually leading them in scoring now. It shoots 40% from three-point range. And so that gives them another weapon out there. And they've got some size inside that can be an issue on both ends. So we're going to have to play well. Last year we were up 20 in the fourth quarter, and we started turning the ball over against their little half-court zone trap. And next thing you know, they had a three-pointer with about 4 minutes to go wide open to cut it to two and missed it. And then from there, it went from 5-7 and we hung on to one. But our guards have got to take care of the ball. We've got to do a better job attacking that thing, and we will. I think our guards are more prepared for it, and actually, you know, I think they'll make some really good decisions. So, in any case, we're gonna have to go up there and play well. There's no doubt about it.
Vic, as always, I appreciate the time. Enjoy that bus ride up there to Fort Worth, and hoping it makes back-to-back road wins, and we'll look forward to next week's contest as well.
Hey, appreciate the time, guys. As always, appreciate the coverage. Praise the Lord, hook 'em horns.
All right, thank you. Thanks, Vic. That's Vic Schaefer, Texas women's head coach. Tomorrow afternoon, you can hear the game. Roger will be up there to have the call. Roger Wallace there and Kathy Harson, 12:45. Tomorrow afternoon with the airtime, 1 o'clock, the tip-off from Ed and Ray Schollmeyer Arena on the TCU campus. Texas and TCU here on 105.3 The Bat is where you hear Texas women's basketball. Every game on 105.3 The Bat, 12:45, airtime, 1 o'clock, tip-off, 105.3 FM, 105.3 The Bat. And it'll be their first meeting of the season with TCU, and TCU comes off beating Tech 51-50 the other night.
Don't think you're going to bring up Lauren Hurd on this show and not give me an opportunity to remind everybody that Hurd family, they've got some athletic genes in that family.
Yeah, I mean, Gerard was something else, and one of my favorite student-athletes to be around, who just was. And Lauren is also always very effervescent. Stuff. She's averaging 16 points and 6.5 rebounds.
I've said it before, I'll say it again, Craig. I've said it on Longhorn Blitz, and I'm thinking about putting up a sign in the studio. On any broadcast in this building that I'm a part of, there will be no Gerard Hurd slander.
No. And shouldn't be. That dude did whatever was asked.
That is your University of Texas single game record holder for total offense. It ain't Vince Young. It ain't Colt McCoy. It ain't Sam Ellinger. It's what Juice did in that game against Cal back in 2015.
Absolutely. And he would do whatever they asked him to do.
Yep. Maybe the most unselfish cat to walk in that building.
Yeah, wide receiver. You put me wherever. I'm happy to help. Whatever you need from me. And Lauren has that same type of attitude, as they just need her right where she is at guard, and she is, she can be a one-person wrecking crew at times. She's been special throughout her career, and Vic said, I keep expecting her to be a senior. She is a senior. She is a senior.
Finally.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, Mike Roach, Horns 24/7 recruiting editor, joins us. We'll visit with him. Look forward to that conversation. Also coming up, we'll have Inconceivable. We'll hear from Chris Beard next hour from last night's Longhorn Weekly program, talk about Oklahoma State. We'll do all that and more when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and hornfm.com.
RPKD.
Look at Robin Kraft. Right. I mean, he went for a at your local juke joint. And that was just to save a buck.
Right. NDA.
Put her on your retainer. Yacht. Retainer.
Retainer. NDA. And hire an escort and tell her to dress up and act like a massage therapist. Which is what Watson should have done. This is your kink or whatever. This is what you like.
KD's on it today.
That's how you have the money to do it.
No, I agree with you.
Weekdays 3 to 7.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you
All right, thanks again to Vic Schaefer joining us. Here on Light the Tower. I know Snoop is bumping back with John Sebastian with Welcome Back because I had to miss a couple of days because of the throat, but we're always happy to welcome Vic Schaefer to the program, and we're also happy to send it in to our Longhorn Notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
Which means welcoming back to the program for our weekly conversation with a recruiting editor for Orange 27, Mike Roach, who joins us on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. How you doing, Mike?
I'm good, gentlemen. How are y'all?
We're great. Glad to have you back with us again.
Yeah, it's been a while with everything, holidays and all that I've had both of you guys on.
So. Yeah, and we haven't talked Buffalo Bills in a while. So here we go. Can they pull it off in Kansas City? Can they get it done at KC on Sunday evening?
And I guess it all depends. I mean, if Josh Allen plays the way he played last Saturday, I don't think anybody in the league can beat him. So, I mean, we'll see which Josh Allen comes out.
You know what? I find myself saying a very similar thing as a Rams fan about Matthew Stafford. You know, if he plays like that, then maybe they got a shot against even with Tom Brady and if the defense plays. But we'll see. I know we're both hoping our teams can win on the road, albeit against the two teams that were in the Super Bowl last year. So we'll hope for the best on that.
Mike, let's go. Let's start with transfer portal and then work our way to junior day from there. You covered some of this in your Mike at Night column last night at Horns247, and you can always get Mike's work at Horns247.com. Let's start with Jalen Moody, the Alabama linebacker transfer. It looked like he was headed to Texas, and then some circumstances in Tuscaloosa changed, and now he is no longer expected to head to Texas. So, as best you can tell it, what's the background on the Jalen Moody situation?
Yeah, I mean, all signs pointed to Texas getting Moody, who, you know, wasn't an ultra productive guy at Alabama. He's played in a lot of reserve roles, but was a guy that I think people had some hopes for that once he got into a full-time playing role, you know, could really turn into something. And so, you know, I think with Moody, he kind of looked at it and said, hey, there's some openings for me here at Alabama. I don't have to leave, you know, after all, with some guys going to the draft. And so, you know, he was able to stay. But I think it hurt for Texas, who was looking for an inside linebacker option, thought they had one, and then he got pulled out from under him.
Mike, that's an interesting position, inside linebacker, and I talked about it when the Moody stuff started happening a few days ago. I talked about it and said, look, you mean they've got DeMarvin Overshown for another year. You've still got Jalen Ford. You don't have Luke Brockermeyer for the spring. He's recovering from the knee injury. There are some options. We've talked about Lorenzo McCaskill, the Louisiana transfer, but you mentioned this in your column, and I think it's worth repeating, at least right now, with you've got enrollment deadlines and you've got, you know, kind of that February 2nd, looks like it's that drop-dead date, the last day you can be in the class and still, you know, and get an exception from somebody on the academic side. It sounds like, Mike, the focus right now for Texas is on guys who are mid-year transfers who can get here and get into winter workouts and be ready to roll in spring ball starts.
Yeah, I mean, that's – if you're bringing in a guy, even if he is a college player, who's coming in fall, in the summer, he's behind as far as coming to, you know, learning your way of doing things when it comes to workouts, learning your way of defense or offense or whatever position he's coming in. So, you know, yeah, the focus is on getting guys who could be here in the spring and really start to kind of acclimate and be able to hit the ground running when they get to fall camp.
Horns 24/7 recruiting editor Mike Roach joining us here on Light the Tower on the Horn. Mike, two guys, I'll just kind of let you kill two birds with one stone here with this question. Isaiah Nayor, we've talked a lot about him, what he brings to the table as a player. What's the background on that? And then any update on Latavius Breeny, the Georgia safety transfer? We've talked about how getting a veteran safety, if Texas could get one, would be a big need for them in the offseason. The background on Nayor, and then anything brewing on Latavius Breeny.
Yeah, and they were, you know, Texas kind of just didn't give up. Even after he had committed to Tennessee, they stayed in contact. And, you know, it's a different deal when you're a transfer. You don't really sign anything. You just show up and enroll. And you've got, even after a commitment from a transfer, you've got a little bit of time, you know, depending on when they can enroll of how long you can get in there. So Texas continued to work him. They came in late for an in-home, just got him to make a visit to campus. And then once he was on campus, it was all but done. You know, I think they kind of illustrated their need for a guy like him on their roster who presents so many, you know, intriguing athletic options at his size, but also his ability to move. And, you know, we had a great article up with Laban DeLay, his high school coach, who kind of talked about his skill set and what makes him, you know, a guy that could really develop into a special player.
And then anything on Latavius Breeny?
Yeah, sorry, I'm Breeny. We do talk to somebody yesterday who does still expect him to visit at some point. I don't have anything firm on that. I mean, I would assume if they want to get him in, it's got to be, you know, this weekend or the next. But nothing firm, but they do expect him to visit at some point. They don't know. The person I talked to didn't have a great read on Texas chances, but obviously when you get a guy on campus – you know, that helps a ton.
Horns 24/7 recruiting editor Mike Roach joining us here on Light the Tower on the Horn. Mike, you make your rounds in and around the DFW Metroplex and around the state. Sark has been getting out and about, and this is the first time he's really had a chance to get into schools and get some one-on-one FaceTime with coaches. As he's gone to various stops with assistant coaches in tow, what's been the feedback you've gotten from just how high school coaches have been able to interact with Sark on a one-on-one basis?
They like him. You know, one coach I talked to that met with him said, you know, you could tell he's still trying to fill in the gaps a little bit with these Texas coaches. And that's why he generally, like when he's in Dallas, he's kind of attached to Jeff Banks, who's recruited for so long and understands these coaches, because, you know, Sark just doesn't have the extreme familiarity. But that he's done a good job really just being pretty open and easy to talk to when he's on those campuses. And, you know, he seemed genuinely interested in what their programs are doing. So I think feedback is good. You know, we've got a big clinic coming up this weekend or next weekend that I usually go to every year. And that's when I get to talk to a bunch of coaches about feedback on stuff. And so we'll have a lot more coming out of that.
I was waiting for it to come down on the Specs text line, Mike, and it just did. Somebody asking any Devon Campbell updates. I know Texas has been by the school this week. What's the latest on Texas and Devon Campbell, the talented five-star offensive lineman out of Arlington Bowie?
There's just not going to be a lot of news on Devon Campbell. I mean, he's down to Texas and Oklahoma, but he's not taking in-home visits. He's not taking official visits, or unofficial visits. So, I mean, it's kind of a waiting game until signing day. I think Texas still stands in the best position here. I think that, you know, Oklahoma's pushing, and I do think that the Bill Biedenbaugh presence there helps them a little bit, but I think in the end Texas wins out here. But I wouldn't look for a ton of late-breaking developments here.
Mike, when in a situation like that, and this is a little bit unique only because of early signing day, where a lot of the hay is in the barn on both sides, but obviously this is still a gigantic target for both Texas and Oklahoma. How much contact, how regular is the contact with the coaching staff with a guy who has said he's not going to make his announcement until signing day? So even with that in mind, how much regular contact would you estimate is going on with the coaching staffs of these schools with Devon Campbell?
You know, there's certainly contact. They reach out via phone, and, you know, they can say hi when they're by the school. Oklahoma had, you know, three or four assistants at his basketball game the other night that I was at. And so, you know, there's a little bit of contact, but it's not, you know, unless I think at a point like this, you kind of leave it up to Devon, because he's clearly shown that he kind of wants to be hands-off with this stuff right now, and he's getting a little bit tired of it. So I think you leave it hands-off and let him reach out to you more than anything. You may check in every once in a while, but it's not as overwhelming as it was probably in the fall.
Hey, how much time are you splitting between basketball watching and keeping up with guys doing in their off-season work?
I have been to 2 basketball games basically since I got out of high school, and they've both been Arlington Bowie games this year.
I see where you're headed there. See what you did there.
Yeah. So I'm not a huge basketball guy. So to get me to there's got to be something going on there. I actually might do it more, though. I've been having a little bit of fun going to those high school games and just kind of watching. And then, you know, off-season stuff really kind of cranks up in the next couple of weeks for me. I actually did my first visit yesterday out to North Crowley, but I will be out and about in the next couple of weeks, really going and seeing the off-season workouts.
Mike, let's talk about this junior day coming up this weekend. You threw out the number in your Mike at Night column last night. Texas could potentially host over 120 kids, have them running around a facility this weekend. As far as you know, what is this day going to look like for Steve Sarkisian and the staff in terms of the program? And any big names top of mind for you expected on campus this weekend?
You know, it's always a great kind of first step for the class. It gets guys on campus. And I think it really kind of can start to be a separator for guys a little bit. You know, you could start to see which guys are really interested. Those guys can see which schools are really interested in them by the way they treat them at these things. And so, the days of Matt Brown and there being 16, 17 commitments come out of these things is over. I think, you know, if you're Texas, you maybe like to pop one or two commitments if you've got guys you feel really good about that can go early. But what you're really doing is kind of establishing a foothold for the future. Even with guys that you haven't necessarily targeted, you know, that's a great opportunity to get them on campus, begin the relationship, and that way, you know, if you need to come back around to them later in the cycle, you've got the relationship established, not starting from scratch.
He's Mike Roach, the recruiting editor of Horns 24/7. You can certainly read his outstanding work at Horns 24/7. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Roach 247. Michael, as always, we appreciate the time. We know how you're grinding this time of year, and we look forward to the weekly conversations. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, fellas. Y'all have a good one.
All right.
Thanks, Mike. If you need an in-depth Junior Day preview, a couple of ways you can get it. Number one, Nick Harris has a running visitors list at Horns 24/7. You can get that. Also, if you're a subscriber to the Longhorn Blitz podcast, which you can do anywhere you get your podcasts, just search Horns 24/7 and click that follow button. You get every episode of the flagship Longhorn Blitz and State of Recruiting, which a new episode dropped this morning with a massive Junior Day preview as a part of it.
All right, coming up next, Inconceivable, here on Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Remember,
Inconceivable!
You keep using the horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Well, it is a Friday. There are things to get to with Inconceivable. Let me start with something good, or a couple.
Hey, Snoop, it's Friday, so what's that mean?
Flaccid time.
See, whenever you set him up for that, there's no explanation on that. He just throws out the word flaccid.
I always wait to see how he's going to respond this week. That's the best. That's the best part of this segment.
And then we're left to you explaining.
We're going to the most flaccid state in the union to grab that low hanging fruit.
We'll get to Florida in a moment. First of all, hey, I know it depends on the thing and what's available at McDonald's, about whether you're in the McDonald's or whatever. Yesterday, excuse me, on National Cheese Lovers Day, they had 50-cent double cheeseburgers. So I did avail myself of one of those. But
back in the day, the double cheeseburger was the McDouble was a pretty big player.
Well, they have still both on the menu.
Okay,
and I wondered for a long time what's the difference. So I got them both one time. McDouble is 2 patties with 1 slice of cheese. Double cheeseburger, 2 patties with 2 slices of cheese. That's the difference.
It's McDouble's not a dollar anymore, is it?
No, but it's like $1.59.
Okay.
And yes, they had 50-cent double cheeseburgers yesterday. So it was they were doing that. But now they want you to know, for the first time in 5 years, The blueberry and cream pie will be back on the menu.
I didn't.
You weren't into the, you're
totally,
not a pie guy.
Totally out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah,
for me.
I thought so.
The McDonald's, they still just do the regular apple pie?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Your standard, and the cherry.
Your standard apple pie.
Yes, and
sir.
The cherry.
Hey, real quick.
Good food, lemon pie at Whataburger.
Real quick food take. I usually rib Snoop for raiding the vending machine whenever, you know, his finances
Everybody
are
ribs Snoop for raiding the vending machine.
I told him
machine.
Vending machine came in clutch because I got a little bit of a late start. Long story short, I've got a dog that's dealing with like a bladder problem, so I got to make sure she takes her medicine.
Right.
So got a little bit of a late start this morning and got stuck in traffic on the Ben White flyover, so I didn't have time to stop and get breakfast.
See, I thought you did the back way up toll one.
It's a long story why okay. I can't do the toll road right now, but not long enough.
Okay.
Not enough time in this segment for that. At any rate, I needed during the first break, I needed some food, so I went down to the vending machine, grabbed a Coke Zero and a bag of Grandma's cookies, and came in clutch.
Good to go. Ready to go with that. Okay. We're going to do more on this next hour. I'll alert Snoop to pull something. But Meatloaf has passed away.
I met Meatloaf one time.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was some kind of deal. I forgot why he was at the Del Diamond. I think he was promoting mm-hmm. some kind of celebrity softball game.
Grew up in Dallas. Went to high school in Dallas.
I met Meatloaf one time.
We'll have more on that, but he passed away at age.
He was in fact in Fight Club.
He wasn't Fight yeah. Club. He was Bob.
No, he was the guy who had.
Yeah, just throw in the Google machine.
Yeah.
We don't want to get Snoop in trouble
yeah,
with the
yeah,
FCC.
Yeah, just leave it at that.
His name was Robert Paulson, Snoop.
Yeah. So he passed away at 74. The oldest person in the United States has passed away. Thelma Sutcliffe. Care to take a guess at her age?
Thelma, okay.
Thelma Sutcliffe.
Oldest person. I'm going to say Thelma was a ripe old 113 years of age.
Pretty good guess. 115 years old in 100 days.
Oh,
man.
Born October 1st, 1906.
I'm not going to make it to one. I don't want to make it to 115, for being
honest.
Said
she'd been doing all right, but yeah, she, oldest person in the world, passed away at age 115.
Can I ask a morbid question to you
guys?
Okay,
sure.
Have you guys ever thought about, okay, once I reach this age, at any point after, thereafter, if I check out, it's cool. Like, you want to make it to, I don't know, 80 or 90 or whatever.
I've thought about that before.
Yeah.
I think it just depends on if you're healthy.
Okay.
I mean, if somebody offered, oh, yeah, you can go in your late 80s, early 90s, but without health problems, just go peacefully in your sleep, I might sign up for that.
Yeah, okay. Okay. I just didn't know if you guys thought about that.
Yeah.
I haven't figured out what the good landmark.
The cutoff
yeah.
Time on that is. Here's something. This will be good. You'll like this. Did you hear about the story about the blinking that was going on in a microwave? I don't know if you guys
blinking
had
blinking going on in the microwave.
And when they discovered why the blinking was going on in the microwave,
no.
I guess you can get to this. There was a Reddit user revealed in a viral post why a greasy microwave's lights were blinking. In a post shared to Reddit's 2.7 million strong, well, that sucks site, a community dedicated to things that drag people down, the post titled, tried to use the microwave at a friend's place and saw the numbers blinking, so I took a closer look. In the video, a cockroach crawled across the front of the microwave that was caked in hardened grease and looked like it had never been cleaned.
Disgusting.
But it becomes clear the whole machine is riddled with roaches, with dozens being seen moving across the green lights. The post was shared on Tuesday. It's been upvoted 27,800 times and received over nearly 1,500 comments. One user said, leave naked, leave behind all the clothes and shoes and belongings you brought with you. Another person brought up the molten lava death of a cinema icon as a way to rid themselves. Seriously, they need to throw that microwave in the spot where the Terminator died in T2. Some said, light that house on fire. They asked how much cleaner it was the rest of the home. He said, surprisingly much better. The kitchen is the shared space while both guys have separate rooms. He said he picked up the microwave from a hawk shop. In the trash it goes. So
why would you buy a microwave from a pawn shop?
Yeah, exactly.
Look, I'm not knocking pawn shops. I've frequented many pawn shops in my days. There's a lot of good stuff you can find at the pawn shop.
Yeah.
Microwave, not one of them. You can get a microwave at a pretty decent price, brand new.
Yeah. So, by the way, according to a pest control company, the three most common types of cockroaches are the German, Oriental, and American kinds. That's
the best kind
called.
Of cockroach is a dead cockroach.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Like, we all have fears, like snakes, spiders. Is there anything more just disgusting that makes you feel like you live in filth than seeing a random roach in the house?
It makes you wonder. It's pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
All right, here's a couple other stories. First of all, emergency alert on the Missouri Highway Patrol Tuesday. Missouri State Highway Patrol put up an emergency. You know, you get the emergency alerts like Amber Alert
or Silver Alert, whatever.
The emergency alert said, and I quote, Gotham City, Missouri, purple and green 1978 Dodge, and it had plates on it. Sedan sounds, and the vision looked a lot like the cars used by the Joker's goons in the original Batman one in 1989. That's Turns funny. Out there is no Gotham City in Missouri, and the message was sent in error during a test, apparently by someone with an impressive knowledge of the vehicles used in that movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so there it was. Yeah, no Gotham City. All right, I don't want to leave it on a bad thing, but we do have a Florida story.
I can get you a pick-me-up.
Okay.
That.
All right. A Florida man was charged yesterday with human smuggling. Now, that's bad enough. With a family of four Indian nationals, from India, and the family of four was found dead, frozen to death in Canada, just yards from the U.S. border. It included a baby and a teenager. Border Patrol agents busted Steve Shand, age 47, as he was driving a 15-passenger van with two undocumented Indian citizens just south of the Canadian border in North Dakota on Wednesday. Law enforcement later came upon five other Indians on foot heading toward where Shan was arrested. One of them was holding a backpack with baby supplies that belonged to a family of four. They got separated from the group. They were dead just steps from the border in the province of Manitoba. So, said it's heartbreaking tragedy. Florida man at the spearheading that. So
get that cauldron bubbling.
Yeah,
man.
All right. So you say you've got something uplifting?
I got to pick me up. You guys remember the Cowboys 49ers game towards the end when the CBS cameras are panning into the crowd to find sad Cowboys fans?
Yeah, and they did a good job of that. So
you remember the guy with kind of the slick back hair? He had it pulled.